Well, welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu. And in studio this afternoon, Jaime Chavez and Kathleen Baumbach, both from the El Paso Community College. We are talking about Hispanic Heritage Month. It's just around the corner. We could start it on 16 de septiembre. But first, bienvenidos, welcome to El Paso Primetime.
Good to see you again, Dennis. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Great, wonderful.
Let's talk about Hispanic Heritage Month. It has grown in leaps and bounds at EPCC over the last few years, and you guys have really put together a killer lineup this time around.
Yeah, we have a kickoff event on 16, or September 16th, at Rio Grande campus from 9:30 to 1:30. We're going to have matachines, we're going to have folklorico, and various other activities going on in the campus cafeteria for the enjoyment. It's open to the public. We encourage the public to come. We have a lot of people who live in the Rio Grande area downtown, and they walk onto campus to participate in events.
Mm-hmm.
September 23rd, we're doing our big deal, our big event at Valle Verde campus. And, of course, again, the public is welcome. Everything is free. In the morning, we'll be having a fiesta. And starting at 11 to 1, we're going to have Hispanic or Chicano writers present their work. So, again, we'd like to see everyone come. By the way, for students, the first is 150 of them are going to get a free meal.
Mm.
And then I believe we're going to have 150 meals for guests and faculty and staff who might want to come to the event. Jaime?
We're also going to have a very special author, Sam Martinez, and he wrote a book. It just came out called Systemic Evil, and it's a case involving several Hispanic agents, Matt Perez specifically, former FBI agent, against the FBI, and there were some discriminatory practices going on mm-hmm. in the FBI at the time in the, let's say, around 1980, 1990. And these agents got together, started litigation, and put an end to this discrimination. Some of these agents, mainly Hispanic agents in the bureau, they were sometimes given very difficult assignments, life-threatening assignments. They wouldn't get promotions as they thought they would based on the service and with the FBI. Mm-hmm. And so they got together, and they noted some sort of discrimination in the FBI. So Mr. Martinez is going to talk about this to the audience, and perhaps also there'll be a question-answer session.
Hopefully there would be. Let me go ahead and stop right here at the edit point. We're taking the 29. We'll go straight to 29, so we're good.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
We're good.
Yeah. So you'll have to tell us to shut up.
Okay. I'll give you fives and all that. So let me pick up here. So this particular presentation is something that's very contemporary, and yet the case litigated for several years, as I recall. And as I also recall, this is one that became, I guess, a precedent for other law enforcement groups who had been discriminated against to be able to go to court and be able to prove that a lot of them had been forced into situations that they should not have been. It should have been even across the board, because let's face it, being in law enforcement, you're going to be out and about, and it's going to be dangerous.
Yeah, they weren't getting the assignments that led to promotion. Mm-hmm. They were given a lot of undercover work because they spoke Spanish and because they were Latino. And those assignments, which were very dangerous, should have led to promotions, but they weren't the ones that were leading to promotions. So it was a clear case of discrimination.
Mm-hmm. See, and I recall this particular case actually being the precedent to Chinese-American law enforcement people in San Francisco. That particular case, I believe, is still in litigation, but what it was if you learned how to speak Mandarin and then some 117 different dialects, of course you're going to be put out on the front line, but the promotions weren't happening either. Mm-hmm. And so this became the precedent for others to be able to practice under and hope that you would get some kind of justice inside the department. So this is a real important topic.
Yeah, and those are the most dangerous assignments. When you work undercover and you're working with cartels or gangs of one kind or another, they are by far the most dangerous assignments. Mm-hmm. Look at Enrique Camarena. I mean, was it Camarena?
Mm-hmm.
He died on assignment in Mexico.
So these are really important key points for our public to be able to come out and listen to and glean all kinds of information and take it home as a piece of oral history, number one. And number two, learn history about what really goes on behind the scenes, so to speak, that the media will occasionally put out there, but occasionally they shuffle it under because other things break from a day-to-day sort of a basis. So it's a real intriguing lineup that you've already started lining up here with this year's Hispanic Heritage Month. What else do you have?
I want to mention quickly that Mr. Martinez will speak on September 23rd mm-hmm. from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Administrative Services Center, the auditorium, and that seats a lot of people, and we should get good crowds and I think very enthusiastic crowds leading up to a question-answer session.
Okay.
Yeah. We're also honoring veterans on Wednesday, October 7th at Trans Mountain Campus. We are especially honoring veterans who served in the Korean War and the Vietnam War. And we sure hope everyone comes out for that because we want to give our service members their due. And honestly, the Korean War was so many years ago that we may not have these veterans around with us forever.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is going to be very nice out there. There will be a POW MIA exhibit. And we are hoping to get at least one Medal of Honor recipient to attend. So we're looking forward to that. And then do you want to talk about the Mentor's Dinner?
The Mentor's Dinner, that's going to feature a former EPCC student mm-hmm. and a UTEP student and very distinguished journalist, Alfredo Corchado. I recall Alfredo when I met him about, I want to say, more than 30 years ago. I'm going to go back in time
mm-hmm.
when I was a lab assistant in the Mass Communication Department at EPCC, and he was a student, a bright young man. And he had the talent to either go into broadcasting or print journalism. And he's made a name for himself. He's moved up the ranks. I believe he was a correspondent with one of the Dallas newspapers yeah. in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And he's written a book called
Midnight in Mexico,
yes. A Reporter's Journey Through a Country's Descent into Darkness. And he's also an outstanding speaker. And I understand, Kathleen, you've been reading his book?
I did. I bought the book when it first came out, and I'm almost done with the book. It's an incredible story. What's especially nice about the book is that he does go into details on his personal feelings and life. He grew up in El Paso. He was born in California. His parents were migrant farm workers. They then came to El Paso and opened up Freddy's Restaurant, Freddy's Cafeteria, and mm-hmm. that is a well-known place in El Paso for the Sunday morning political discussions. And he grew up surrounded by all that, waiting tables in the restaurant, interacting with all the people that would come in there. And he is now the Mexico City Bureau Chief for the Dallas Morning News.
Right.
The book is somewhat dark. His life has been threatened many times. He's had to leave Mexico City and come back to El Paso and even become fearful in El Paso and gone to Dallas. For 1 year, he went to Harvard on a fellowship. It's a really interesting book. Since we lived through those times on the border, say a decade ago, we lived through that. It's especially poignant to mm-hmm. read the book.
It is an incredible journey that Alfredo has taken over the years, especially since the book was released 2 years ago. I too have have a copy of the book, and I've read it once, and I'm going through it again, just simply because I'm just mesmerized by the poignancy, as you pointed out, but also there's a portion of it that's rather whimsical as he remembers his childhood and kind of puts everything into perspective. I love the way that it's done. So it's nice to have him coming back and actually getting back to his roots at community college.
Yeah, one thing I learned from the book is he does love to come back to El Paso.
Mm-hmm.
El Paso he's very true in his heart to El Paso. As many experiences as he's had. Now, that's the only event. It's a dinner event from 6 to 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. on October 14th at, again, the Academic Services Center located off of Viscount. It is the only event that costs money. It does cost $25. We raise the money for scholarships, which this year we are giving out scholarships to EPCC students. They have to meet a set of criteria, and we're hoping to get a lot of applicants. Maybe the hardest part is they need a 3.5 GPA and at least 12 credit hours under their belt, but we will be honoring the scholarship recipients at the event as well. So if anybody is interested in the scholarship, they should go to the EPCC Financial Aid website, and they should be able to get information about this scholarship. The turnaround time is going to be very quick. The scholarship can only be applied towards EPCC tuition. It's a tuition scholarship, an amount that would cover one full semester.
One of the hardest working groups in El Paso are your first and second year students at community college, because they really want to be able to prove to the world not only of their talents, but also their career aspirations. And so I don't think you're going to find yourself lacking in 3.5 GPA students wanting the scholarship. But we'll put that out there again. And they need to go to your website.
Yes, the Financial Aid website or the Hispanic Heritage website. You can just Google it. It's very easy to find. Of course, the scholarship is open to any student who qualifies based on their GPA. They write a short 2-page essay. So it is open to any student, not just Hispanic students, but any student who would like to apply.
But it's for community college.
It's for EPCC. Community college. So it is designed for the students we have.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, I mean, I admire my students so much. Jaime and I are both faculty. So we're in the classroom. And my students are often trying to do something that's the hardest thing they've ever done in their lives. And they do succeed, and it's a wonderful feeling.
Oh, absolutely. When they come over here to UTEP after getting their associates and they want to move on, not just past the baccalaureate, but they want master's and PhD, the focus always comes through you guys. From EPCC.
Yeah, and UTEP's done a study, and the community college students do just as well when they transfer as the students who started at UTEP.
Mm-hmm.
They do just as well, and yes, it's wonderful to see them embark on a lifelong journey of education, and the majority do transfer to UTEP, wonderful university.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually know of a student who started in our literacy program, went on, earned his bachelor's degree at UTEP, and then his master's degree at UTEP. It's a long path, but people can do it. And other students come in fresh out of high school and already are very competent with their skills and take their basics at the college, the transfer curriculum, and then transfer on to UTEP. It's wonderful to see.
I recall students from 10, 12 years ago when they started. And now they're on the faculty with us, some, and some even working on PhDs. And you mentioned first and second year students, they take advantage. Once they get to community college, they see all these opportunities for scholarships and growth, and they take advantage of it. And it pays off.
Mm-hmm. It does. And it pays off in the long run, not only academically, but I think also emotionally. It gets them into a situation where they know that they can really, really excel. It's not just this whole thing of getting through it all. There are a lot of students that have that idea of, I'll just get by. No, not here. And certainly not at community college. We want you to excel. And programs like Hispanic Heritage Month really kind of accents who they are and really brings out the true being in each one of them, I think.
Yeah, so, I teach Chicana literature in one of my courses, mm-hmm. and you see that happening in the class where students, it's like looking into a mirror, and they say, well, my grandmother was like that, or I can see myself. I lived through that kind of an experience, and it just wakes them up, makes them more aware of the bigger world around us, develops pride, mm-hmm. which is so important, to be proud of who you are. And we do really push students to take the transfer route. Some of them start at EPCC, and they haven't really thought what they're going to do after they finish EPCC. And we try to push them and educate them on how beneficial it is to transfer to a four-year institution. Like UTEP, we know most of them will go to UTEP. So UTEP's always my example in class because sure. that's where most of them, when they start thinking, hey, I could go even further in terms of my education, UTEP is the favorite, the most common place to want to go.
I teach here, too, and I tell them, well, I'll see you at UTEP in a year or two. And they, sure enough, they're here, and mm-hmm. they take advantage of it.
Yeah. When you're in the classroom and you see the light in their eyes as you give them the information that they need in order to succeed, what is it about those particular students that bring the rest of the students up to their bar, their level, and then pushes them beyond it? What is it about those students? Is there something that you've noticed that's a little more special? You know what I mean? There's just a light. There's like a passion that you guys fire up in them.
I think people start seeing where they can go. And they also learn that, hey, I am cut out for college. I can do this. I can do this, and if I work hard, I can excel at this.
It's a desire also. I had a student recently, and she wants to be a pediatrician, and she's got a mindset. She's got a focus that I'm going to start at EPCC. I'm going to go on to UTEP. I'll go elsewhere and take advantage. But that's her mindset. It's a mindset and a desire mm-hmm. to want to succeed, to reach your goals.
It's a wonderful story to be told and to be constantly be told, which brings us right back to Hispanic Heritage Month. When you guys sit down in the board meetings and you decide how to best portray the Hispanic heritage that we have here in the Desert Southwest, is it really a hard process to go through? Is this a year-long process in order to come up with a program?
We do start working about 6 months in advance, and most of the people working on it are volunteers, which does include some community members, mostly EPCC college and faculty, I mean staff and faculty. It's not difficult. There's a cornucopia of things. So in previous years, we've done other things. We've had an immigration forum. We've had various politicians come and speak. We've done a wide variety of events, and we decided this year we would do these events. Some of them are fun. Some of them are educational. We were lucky enough to be able to get both Sam Martinez and Alfredo Corchado for the events. And it's a mix of fun along with educational events. Mm-hmm. And it's open to the community. We have community members on the committee. And it's open to the community, and we welcome everyone to come. All events are free except for the dinner event, which we use to raise money for scholarships, the event with Alfredo Corchado, mm-hmm. the writer.
So as we go through the process, there of your website, when they go to the website, all they have to do is access it in order to get the calendar.
Yes, yes.
Do you get a chance to walk, get out into the public and actually give presentations, like the Lions Club and all this other stuff? Have you been able to get that kind of an opportunity to present one-on-one?
Well, one of the great things about Hispanic Heritage Month is that every year we have more volunteers to help put it on. And as we have more volunteers, the committee gets bigger and bigger every year, which is wonderful to see. Mm-hmm. We have more people who can go out there and do things like that. So we welcome the opportunity to speak to groups in the community.
We also push it in the classroom. We encourage students that these evenings to come on out and attend one of these events. As I understand it, some classes, some instructors, they take their classes, they earn extra points, and they learn a lot from this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot to be learned, especially when you start getting into the nuts and bolts of the facets, the many facets that is Hispanic heritage. It's quite numerous in terms of longitudinal study and in terms of the latitude of the embrace of our heritage. It's quite expansive.
It is, and we generally have a lot more ideas than we have space and time on the calendar.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we just put those away for next year. We've been doing Hispanic Heritage Month for 14 years, and it's just gotten bigger and bigger.
There are so many things, and again, it's all about facets and whatnot. I'm thinking back to a poster I just saw just recently about Pancho Villa enjoying ice cream here in El Paso at where it's now the CVS Pharmacy. There used to be an ice cream parlor back there in the early part of the 20th century. Now, what's really interesting about that is that he liked American ice cream more than he liked Mexican ice cream because of its flavor, because it had more dairy in it than Mexican ice cream.
Well, we were the headquarters for the Mexican Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
We hosted all the revolutionaries, depending on if they were on the inside or the outside, which side they were taking. They raised their arms here. The railroad was very helpful in that way to ship in lots of munitions from the United States. The U.S. government had made it illegal, but there's a long distance between El Paso and Washington, especially in 1910 or 1912. So we have quite a storied history.
And that would be another facet to be able to open up further on down the line, because I think as I look at things on social media, especially Facebook, all of a sudden over the last, I would say the last 6 months, people are looking deeper and deeper into El Paso's history of Mexican heritage to see exactly how the Mexican Revolution affected this whole border region, and how the American government actually became almost subversive to itself in order to kind of protect its own interests along the border. I thought that was starting to be a little more interesting than normal for an August afternoon, just perusing through all the puppy ads and all this stuff on Facebook, and suddenly you get hit with this, and it's like, wow.
It's more, Kathleen, food for thought for future events and ideas for Hispanic Heritage Month. I want to mention also that a lot of students get involved with Hispanic Heritage Month. They're attracted to it, not just Hispanic students, but many students of different backgrounds at El Paso Community College, at all the campuses. They get involved. They bring their friends, their parents.
Mm-hmm.
It's a community event overall.
Sure, yeah. And it's supposed to be.
Uh-huh.
You know, one of the whole things about shows like this, a public affairs show is supposed to bring community together. And it doesn't matter from where you come from or where you're going. As long as you're here in the desert Southwest, you're going to be part of our community. So why not embrace our community for what it truly is? Learn the history, learn the language, learn the culture, learn about each other. I think that's fair. You know, that's an easy way to do it. And with your events here with Hispanic Heritage Month open to the public, why wouldn't you take advantage of it, listeners? I mean, seriously.
Yeah. We welcome members of the public to come. We do get many people come from the public. The campuses are accessible. There's parking. So they can come on campus and park and go to one of the day events. Or we have the night event with Sam Martinez, his book on the FBI agent's lawsuit. And then we have the dinner, which is the only event that costs money, $25, because we're raising money for scholarships from the dinner. We welcome the public. We encourage the public.
We certainly have a handshake, not only a handshake agreement, but abrazos with your every one of the departments at community. Just simply because EPCC has been and always will be a vital cog in making El Paso what it's supposed to be. It's part of the community. You all have always been part of the community. You'll always be part of the community.
And these events are just around the corner, so we hope to see everybody there.
Absolutely.
It's just a matter of days now.
And the website will be up on our website so that you can access it. If you forget how to get to the community college access, just come to our website, ktep.org, and click on it. It'll be under El Paso Primetime. Is there anything else that maybe I didn't touch on or we didn't touch on that you might want to kind of like refresh memories over?
We were talking why September, October, mm-hmm. why not the whole month of September as Hispanic Heritage Month? Because many Latin American countries, and of course including Mexico, received their independence in mid-September. Other countries, Costa Rica, Nicaragua. So that's why it's celebrated from mid-September through mid-October.
Okay. Well, that makes sense, which also now puts a whole new light into, oddly enough, Germans, the German Oktoberfest. Oktoberfest is mid-September to mid-October, and now it starts to make a whole lot of sense. You had so many immigrants from Germany coming into Mexico over a period of at least a century, if not longer. And they all acclimated, and everything started to come to fruition. And so as we got into the latter part of the 20th century, it only made sense to be able to combine the two, celebrate two different cultures all at one time and have a big party.
And you see it in the music, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the food.
Yeah, and the food. You mm-hmm. see it in the food. You see it in people like me who have a German last name, the German influence. And mm-hmm. now I'm not sure if we still have German soldiers here. There was talk that they were being pulled out.
They, for the most part, are gone, but there is a small part of an officer garrison still at Fort Bliss. They won't leave until, I believe, next year.
Okay, but Fort Bliss celebrates Oktoberfest
mm-hmm.
and does a very good job with that.
Yep, and our neighbors to the north over at Holloman Air Force Base do likewise, and so does White Sands Missile Range, where they still have a contingent of German Air Force learning, you know, the basics of sorts. Which I think is just absolutely drop-dead gorgeous, because really, you mentioned the music. I'm thinking banda.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think mm-hmm. about the influence of the polka, especially in terms of the horns and how the whole thing just resonates. You know, for those who love banda, you have no idea how old that music really is. And it's wonderful. I mean, that's party.
And it's part of our shared culture.
We're blessed with a lot of ethnicity here in the Southwest.
We certainly are.
We are. Mm-hmm.
You know, and we should embrace it, and this is a great way to do it. Well, Kathleen Hyman, thank you so much for coming in and sharing all this information, and even more so, we just got into a nice conversation about our heritage that sits here in the border. It's all part of being part of the community, so come on back anytime.
Dennis, thank you so much.
Mi casa su casa.
Thank you very much.